Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Gentlemen, I'm Melody Suderstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events from Wednesday, March 12th, 2014. And, of course, we'll be talking about gold today, as we had a very nice day in gold today, up $17 at $1,367. You have silver up 41 cents. At $21.40, platinum was up 8 at $14.80, and you have palladium up 8 at $780. The USDX today is still trading quite a bit lower, 79.58 down 0.20, and crude oil today was down another $2 at 98. And the paper markets today, they were down bigger this morning. World markets took a hammering, but the Dow only suffered 11 points to the negative, 16,339. The NASDAQ was up 16 at 43.23, and the S&P was basically unchanged at 18.68 with the 10-year yield trending down 0.04 at 2.73%. And I'm not sure if I can bring up quickly. I didn't. Some of those world markets got hammered overnight. China's back down below 2,000. But I don't. I'll have to see. I can bring them up in a little bit, Al. The European markets, I think Germany got hit pretty good last night. So it surprises me that the Dow and our markets weren't so bad. But, of course, they could have been following our markets from yesterday, which were only down 60-some points on the...
You think they're reacting to our markets, per se, or they're reacting to what's happening in the Ukraine?
I don't think it has anything to do with... Well, I mean, it does have something to do with Ukraine, but I think also China's numbers are coming out to where they've been hitting pretty hard. What's funny is no one really connects the dots, if you ask most people, who are China's biggest clients. You'd have to say the U.S. and Europe. So if they're down 18 and 19% for the first of the year, you would think a lot of that percentage would be from us and the Europeans. But no, we're good here, and we're blaming it on the weather. You don't hear China crying that it's the weather. But so they're having difficulties, and, of course, you have all their shadow banking. Copper took a significant hit to the downside. I don't know, someone talked to me today about where China, their shadow banks were using China copper as some sort of a a currency. Well, I'm not quite sure of how that was managed, but copper has been hit. But a lot of your food commodities are up.
Yeah, I have a hard time imagining that the price of food is going to go down. And any kind of a, no matter what sort of circumstance you might predict for the future, it seems that the world demand for food is so high that it's hard to imagine how the price of food can go down. In a depression, we can anticipate that prices are going to fall for just about everything. And we would expect that might be true for food, and it may be on some local markets and the rest. But given the overall increase in demand, I don't see how it can happen. It seems more likely to me, instead of seeing the price of food go down, I'd expect to see the supply of food go down. Right? There'd be less food available, but the price would be as high or higher. And that's speculation, but it's seems plausible to me.
Well, the grain futures were mostly higher today. You had wheat for May delivery that was higher. Corn was higher. Oats, they rose. And I think that had something to do with Ukraine, since we know that Ukraine is a major producer of wheat and corn. So I can see these numbers being higher with the difficulties that Ukraine is having. But you're correct also. It's probably a combination, because I think prices for food aren't going to go lower as long as there's people starving around the world.
That's exactly right. And it would be a different situation if we had a closed market here in the United States. We were growing our own food, eating our own food. We weren't importing. We weren't exporting if it was a closed market. But as we get deeper and deeper into a global free trade zone, in the end, the price of our food is to some extent determined by how many people are going to bed hungry in India or China or wherever. Those people are looking for some food. It has to hold. It has to affect even prices here in the United States.
Yes, it does.
All right. So what's next, Melody?
Did I say hello, Al, today?
I don't remember. Did I say hello back?
I don't remember if I said hello back or not. I can't imagine. But there was an oil rigger, an oil rig. I'm glad I said R. There was an oil rig worker that he said he saw the missing plane go down. There was a rig worker in Vietnam.
He's just been a 15 minutes of fame. Are now locked up. He's getting his.
He wrote a letter to his employer claiming he saw Flight 370 go down in flames. In fact, it was Bob Woodruff. He's the one who obtained the letter. And he tweeted, the oil rig worker claims in the employer confirmed letter that the plane went down. Vietnamese say they found nothing. The letter by Michael Jerome McKay alleges that he observed the plane burning at a high altitude while he was aboard the oil rig Sangha Merku off Vung Tha.
Easy for you to say. See if you can say that five times in a row and very quickly.
I think I did quite well. Thank you. Once is enough.
Once you did it pretty well for one time.
Yeah.
Let's see if you could do it two or three in a row.
From when he saw the burning plane until the flames went out, still at a high altitude, was 10 to 15 seconds. There was no lateral movement, so it was either coming toward our location, stationary, or going away. Well, that's what else could it be? It's not going up.
Exactly.
It's not going up.
There was something moving, and it was either coming towards me or it was going away from me. Well, duh. That's true for everything. You know?
God love him.
Here I stand. It either comes toward me, goes, or it goes away from me. If it's moving, that's a fact. I don't know.
So still the mystery. Someone actually sent me an email yesterday questioning whether it could be an EMP attack.
No.
I don't think an EMP could be that concentrated.
That's exactly right. It couldn't be that focused. If it knocked that plane down to the sky, an EMP attack would knock hundreds or thousands of planes out of the sky. It just depends on how big it is, but it's almost impossible that one EMP attack only attacked that I mean, it would be a very refined technology. If they're able to do that, then
I don't think
so. It's improbable.
However, I said to you yesterday, there's a possibility, perhaps, I mean, there's all sorts of laser technology in the satellites. Perhaps somebody pushed the wrong button and a laser came out, zapped it, and lasers can usually pretty much disintegrate everything.
Nah, that's not true. They can't disintegrate a whole plane. They can punch holes in it, the rest of that sort of thing.
It depends on the power of it.
Or a cannonball or something, and they may knock a hole in it. But it's
no, it depends on the power of the laser beam.
Mm.
I mean,
that's not a probable explanation. I think it's more likely. You may remember
that's
that
more logical than anything I've heard so far.
Yeah, I think the most logical one is the movie with Matthew Broderick. Goes back probably 20 years ago, Would You Like to Play Global Thermonuclear War, where he's scamming around in the early part of the internet, and he's found a way to get into the government computers, and he thinks he's found a game. And what he's actually found is the launch sequence for starting a third world war. And one thing leads to another, and here's this kid having this, he thinks he's playing a game, he doesn't understand that. Now, this is a real deal, and he's starting a third world war, so perhaps that's what happened. Maybe some high school kids have cracked through an NSA security to capture control of a vitally important computer.
Perhaps, and then it could just be
perhaps
aliens.
Space aliens, that's another
space
one.
Space aliens.
Could be the space
and
aliens.
I like my idea, Bermuda Triangle, just it moved. It moved.
Yeah, it might be. Maybe so, because of global warming.
The global
warming. It was
getting
too warm down around Bermuda, so it's
the planet is shifting, so that shifted. Hey, that's right. The planet is shifting, so it shifted the Bermuda Triangle.
Getting into that word shifting again. We did shifting yesterday. Let's not do shifting anymore, okay?
Well, if you want to hear about
shifting, I don't know.
If you want to hear about shifting, President Obama today said that his time is almost up. It's a point.
No kidding.
It's a point.
I've been thinking that.
It's a point he's making to liberal Democratic donors to get them to donate generously.
Mm-hmm.
He was at a fundraiser last night in New York City, and it is really creepy what he says. I hope you will all step up, because although I'm very optimistic about our long-term trends, the notion that we would waste 2 years in further inaction rather than move boldly on a path that I think all of us in this room agree on, we don't have time to waste the clock.
Do you think the whole room agrees on impeachment? That's the path I'd recommend.
There's less than 2 years left, less than 3 years left. I want to squeeze every last bit of work that I can during the remainder of my term so that looking back, I'm going to be able to say that we left everything on the field, and every single person I could help in this office, which is such an incredible privilege, I helped.
What is he talking?
Disturbing.
Yeah, I know.
Disturbing.
It sounds like he's saying that every special interest that I can help, I helped. That's his big ambition. I don't understand that this man is trying to help the American people in the sense that he wants to help the middle class. I get the impression he has some special interest that he's sympathetic to or paid to be sympathetic to, and he wants to help them, and the rest of it he's prepared to sacrifice.
Which is, this election is so very important, because if Democrats rule, I mean, that's what they're going to do for the next 2 years, and I've been saying that for a long time.
I don't think anybody's going to rule as long as Obama's a lame duck. Who's going to rule?
Won't be a lame duck if you get those Democrats in there.
I think he's a lame duck. I said something to that effect, I think, 6 months into his second term. That's what he's really taught.
He might be these first 2 years. He is a lame duck the first 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
But if you get Democrats, they push out some of those Republicans, and you get Democrats, and it's all Democrats, they got, who knows what they might do.
But
he is threatening, he's also threatening to veto a law that would allow Congress to sue him in federal court.
Allow Congress to sue him?
He is threatening.
What about suing him in a Kenyan court? How about
Obama
that?
Obama threatens vetoes of bills requiring him to follow the law. So he's.
Oh my God! Can you understand that?
Mm-hmm.
What a shameless! Just he is going to. He doesn't want to be sued. He wants the right to disobey the law, and he doesn't want to be sued to enforce the law, which is his job as president of the United States.
I'm just telling you what it's saying here. President Obama is threatening to veto a law that would allow Congress to sue him in federal courts for arbitrarily changing or refusing to enforce federal laws because it violates the separation of powers by encroaching on his presidential authority.
Yeah, well, that's real interesting because they operate primarily, what passes for federal government right now operates primarily under the guise of administrative law. And I know this. I've studied this to some degree, and I'm reasonably familiar with what's going on. I know from reading the congressional record just last night. I was reading it on a radio program last night that I do on Tuesdays. Not the congressional record. It was a report by the Congress, the House Judiciary Committee, back in 1946, when the Administrative Procedures Act was about to be adopted. And they warned that it was dangerous and that they'd used the word evil and insidious to describe that particular act. This was the House Judiciary Committee. And they pointed out that the government had worked at it for 10 years, over 10 years, matter of fact. They said over 10 years that they had been working, preparing that act to be enacted by Congress. It took them about 4 months to draft the Constitution at the Constitutional Convention. The government spent 10 years. That's back in 1787, thereabouts. The Congress spent 10 years trying to draft the Administrative Procedures Act and before they actually enacted it. And the reason is because it's a virtual revolution. They did something terrible to this country by imposing administrative law. And the problem with administrative law, the big difference is this. Administrative law combines all three fundamental powers of government. That's the legislative, executive, and judicial. All three of those powers are combined under one authority, under a single roof, essentially. And it is an absolute denial of the concept of separation of powers. There is no separation of powers in administrative law. All three of them, and all three of the branches of government work together under administrative law, and they ultimately work against you and me. When we have separation of powers, we can at least hope that one of the branches out of the three is going to stand up for the people. But when we have administrative law, nobody stands up for the people. The government works against us. And therefore, when I hear that Obama is complaining that when the Congress is trying to sue him, it violates separation of powers, I'm thinking, why, you hypocritical so-and-so. You violate separation of powers every day you're passing another executive order. He's the one who's violating separation of powers. The whole government is doing it, but it's laughable to me, at least, to hear any of them complain, oh, somebody in the government's violating separation of powers. The whole thing is absurd.
Well, there's another, he also threatened to veto another bill by Representative Ron DeSantis out of Florida, which would require the administration to explain decisions not to enforce the laws when those decisions are rooted in policy concerns rather than just constitutional concerns. And the Justice Department is already required to do so. But
do you have any idea how much it costs to hire a good fiction writer? They've already absorbed all the liars they can find to do the economic indicators, and now you're saying they have to hire more fiction writers to write more phony stories about why they're disobeying the law? Can't afford it, Melanie. It's too bad.
I get it.
It's too weak. We can't afford more military. We can't afford more fiction writers in government. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melanie Cederstrom on Financial Survival, and we'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
The ancient Greeks thought thymer provided strength. Indeed, the chemical compounds of thyme contain antioxidants, an effective germicide that kills whooping cough bacteria and makes breathing easier. Just imagine what you can do with thyme herb when it comes to respiratory ailments like croup, pneumonia, asthma, and sinusitis. The extra benefit of thyme herb is that it soothes nerves and stops spasmodic coughing, so you can get some rest. Who says you don't have time to take care of yourself? Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free for thyme tincture and tea to soothe your cough and get some rest. 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International 704-875-8010 or online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
We're going to continue the special. Of course, once I get on a special, we like to keep it as long as possible. However, prices did move up. And since we're basing our price on $20 gold pieces on the $100 increase over a 1 ounce gold bullion coin, all prices have moved up. So 1 ounce gold eagle coin is $1,425. Mint State 62 $20 gold piece is $1,525. So both are great prices, but the $20 gold piece at $100 over bullion. It wasn't that long ago, Al, that we talked about $150 was a great buying opportunity for the $20 gold pieces. Yeah. And I've been able to adjust my prices for $100 over gold bullion. So it's a great opportunity. Give us a call at our 800 number, 375-4188. You can buy one or 100. And, of course, always visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter and take it away, Al.
Oh, we got an article here from CNS News. Labor
wait,
force.
Wait, wait. We have a caller.
We have a caller. All right. Let's see what the caller has to say. We have Jim from West Virginia. What do you got for us, Jim?
Well, actually, I'm a dog caller. But I have two. Little points I'd like to touch on, and one pretty important one, which I've waited to bring up for quite a while. Thank you for mentioning the administrative law, because there are thousands of courtrooms in America which aren't courtrooms. They're called hearing rooms. Mm-hmm. You go to DMV, you have a problem with your license, maybe they goofed up on the points or whatever, and so you go to a hearing. Also, Administrative Procedures Act 1946, these regulatory agencies, federals, would throw out something or another into the Federal Register, and if Congress didn't object, it became the force of law. So all three are administrative law. My dad was involved in patent law, and he knew darn good and well what that was all about. But that's point one. Point two, money almost has a life of its own if you watch just the money. And let's say that things, money likes to go where it will grow and be safe. So let's say that the couple markets in Europe or wherever or in Asia get beaten down. A lot of times our market won't reflect it because people think, oh, that ship is safer to be on rather than this ship over here, even though they're all sinking. So that's another point. So a lot of times it's kind of hard to predict what markets are going to do. Y'all pay a lot of attention to the markets and the commodities. Okay, the big point. And I've talked this over to Bob Chapman on email and waited to bring it out. Okay, there are two things about food. Well, certain things, like I used to read books about this trash, certain things react differently to shortages. Let's say there was a hot dog factory in the United States and it shut down, went down, whatever, and produced 10% of hot dogs. Well, hot dog prices might go up 5% because people think, oh, maybe eat some sausage, maybe eat more eggs or something else for protein. But another thing, like ammunition, the shortage of ammunition, the price goes through the roof 10 times bigger.
Yeah.
Certain other things, like, well, foodstuffs, if you get down to the grains, which is the basis for almost all the livestock, too, affects beef prices. You can have a 10% grain shortfall, and you can have easy 20, 25% increase in the price of food because it's pretty hard pricing. People must eat.
Yeah, that's the point.
Things. Right, right. Now, there's
you have to eat. And there's another point. Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
It's pretty much common knowledge that the government subsidizes the price of food in this country.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
That'd be one of the first things.
What would the price of food be if it weren't for government subsidies? And in a worst case scenario, you can assume that those government subsidies are going to disappear, which suggests that the loss of government subsidies would also increase the price of food at the grocery store.
Yeah, and there's another one. I'm going to put a cherry on the top of it and put a bombshell into it, too, in just a bit. But, you know, another thing, like when federal governments go down in other countries, they will cut off the money to the provinces first.
Mm-hmm.
So that all the rioting and bloodshed occurs in the provinces as opposed to the central capital. So, yeah, they'll shut down that which hurts us the most because they're trying to kill us a bunch to get us to start a civil war. Now, this is the bombshell, cherry on the top, whatever you want to call it. And Bob, is it Bob Chapman? I flipped some letters back and forth about this. The Chicago Board of Trade, COMEX now, when you first hear of, oh, there's a food shortage on the national media, you will see the same COMEX traders, which has suppressed the price of gold and silver, will drive the price of commodities, basic commodities, be it pork bellies, to corn, whatever, through the stinking roof.
Yeah.
So that's a very big point to get foodstuffs, which are storable now, and start a garden now.
I agree with you. Because one thing for sure, anyone who looks at the information understands that the typical grocery store only doesn't have a warehouse out and back. The entire inventory is on the shelves where the people walk around in the grocery store, and it's restocked every night. And if it weren't restocked, there's enough food in the average grocery store to last for 3 days of normal purchases. But if there were a problem, there would be a panic to get down to the grocery store and grab everything except the shelves themselves. It'd disappear in a day.
Well, I'll tell you
and
what.
You can expect that kind of spike would panic also affect the commodities markets, and I don't know how long it would last, but I'll bet you there would be a spike that would be spectacular for, who knows, days, weeks.
Yes, and like, for instance, also think about how you prepare it. Now, we don't have a bunch of dehydrated food, but we've been canning food, and we've got a little garden going, and we're learning. But how you could prepare it? Dry beans and rice. Well, I know this sounds goofy, but you could take the lid off of a typical kerosene lantern, and you can put a bowl that size of larger than a cereal bowl, stainless steel bowl, mm-hmm. and you can cook dry mm-hmm. beans. So you
understand
think about how you could prepare it. So think about that. But, folks, it's about time. If you haven't stocked up, you better get ready. Also, I go to bulk food stores, get rice by 50 pounds, beans by 50 pounds, coffee 25-pound bags. But for crying out loud, this is about the last hue and cry I'll make about this. But it is going to be a horrific shock to the market. So when you look at the output of real commodities and goods, that's the real economy. And I thank you all for doing such a good job.
Thank you, Jim. Appreciate your call. It's Jim from West Virginia. I got one article here from CNS News. Labor force participation hits record low for Americans in their 20s. That's the headline. Labor force participation rate in 2013 for Americans in their 20s hit the lowest level since 1981. We're saying that kids, you know, out of high school, maybe out of college, they are not finding it. It's not easy for them to find a job. Their labor participation rate is at a 42-year low. For 20 to 24, Bureau of Labor Statistics says that it's at a 42-year low. I'm not absolutely certain what all of the implications are of that are. It implies that we aren't going to have, these kids aren't going to have families as early in life as they might otherwise. They're not going to have children as early in life as they might otherwise. They're not going to get a second family car. They're not going to buy a house. They're a bunch of things. And because they don't have jobs, and that can't help to stimulate the economy. It's not one of those signs where you sit back and say, oh, yeah, that's great, 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 great. The economy, yeah, the recovery is here. No, it's not. You know, it's not. That's all. It doesn't mean that we're going to see a disaster necessarily, but we could certainly see some very difficult times. I say it on a regular basis. The worst case scenario is, by definition, the least likely scenario. The worst thing, the absolute worst thing that can happen, that probably isn't going to happen. But it doesn't mean we're going to see some difficult times, some bad times. Might go to not go to the worst, but it still could go to the bad or very bad. Hard to say. But I think Jim is right when he says you better get stocked up, because we can't give you evidence to support this contention, but it really does feel to me, I got a feeling, all right, which is unreliable. I feel it in my gut. And the only thing my gut is absolutely reliable about is it telling me when I need to eat something. My gut is always knows when I'm hungry. It knows if I need to vomit. It knows whatever. You know, it can tell me. You can't rely on it for economic advice per se, but just the same, my gut suggests that we've got about 60 days, 90 days before we see something dramatic. Not the end of the world, but a significant step downward. And I think from what Jim was talking about, he thinks it's coming sooner than I do. And I'm trying to give myself a little leeway here. So if it turns out it takes longer than what I suspect or my suspicion, then people, you know, I'm saying 90 days, giving myself a little more opportunity to be right. And if I'm wrong by 90 days, everyone will have forgotten, except for Melody. She'll remind me, she says, oh, you remember, you said 90 days. But most people won't remember. So I'm kind of covering my backside on this a little bit, you understand? But it does feel like we're getting close to something.
Well, I mean, Al, we add up all the signs out there. I mean, we know that the stock market has been stretched. I mean, if people really get it, I mean, the numbers that we've seen, the Dow, the NASDAQ still hasn't gone back to its high, you know, back in, 13, 14 years ago. And we've just come out of, before the recession hit, supposedly, it was the biggest expansion in history. But yet our stock market is a couple hundred points higher, or 1,000. We were, mid-14,000. We're at 16,000. Big deal. I mean, everything is so rigged. Everything is, when we talk about illusion, it is incredible what they have created.
Yeah,
but if we look at all these signs and we add them all up,
it's incredible. It's dangerous. Go
very
ahead.
Dangerous.
Yeah.
And when we add all this up, you can only stretch that balloon so far before it
exactly
pops.
Right. Exactly right. The reason it's so dangerous is because politicians, whether they started this fraudulent system out of malice or just ambition,
I think it's a combination. I think it was a combination.
Yes, there you go again. Never get a one answer, will I?
Yes, you will.
No, it's not. Oh, it's both. It's both. It's always both. I try to do an either or, and it's both. Well, you're probably right. I agree with that. But it still irritates me. Any case, where were we? The danger is that they start this out and someone says, listen, we need to have, the economy needs to be stronger to get President Jones reelected. And of course, the people in positions of power and the incumbents in Congress, they know that they have a higher probability of being reelected if the economy is strong. So they are willing to tinker with it. In the year or so before the election, they're willing to jack the economy up with artificial means. Right? It's like putting the economy on speed. We'll give them a little drugs, that's all. It's like taking a racehorse and giving it some drugs so it runs faster at the track. Well, it seems like a cool idea because then we're going to win the race. But once you do that, you've got to keep that horse running at that speed or somebody's going to figure out it was drugged. And now the drugs become a regular part of economic process, procedure, policy. We got to get that drug out there. We've got to artificially stimulate the economy, because once you get into these lies, you can't walk out of them. You wind up having to back them up and then back up the new lies and back up the lies after that and back up the lies after that until you have a house of cards that does not resemble reality. Well, it resembles reality, but it's not reality. It's so far removed from reality that if one of the lies fails, the whole house of cards can drop. And in my opinion, that analogy more or less describes where we are today. We talk about government subsidizes the price of foods. Government is, they are helping to keep the price of food down, knowing that makes for happy consumers. At the same time, they're helping to keep the price of stocks up, because they think that will inspire people to think we've got a stronger economy. They are messing with things in ways that in the end, you should have just left alone. Just leave them alone. And I know there's going to be ups and downs, and it's going to be perhaps less predictable. But it's not going to be as dangerous, in my opinion. We would wind up living in a world where, all right, we have our problems. Yeah, the stock market goes suddenly up, it goes suddenly down. Live with it. You want to play that game? Live with it. But you can't have the lies and expect to have a happy ending. I just don't see how that's possible. I don't. Government seems to think it is. I don't agree. So it's all dangerous with the manipulation.
It really is. And people know there's something going on.
Yeah, I know. People know, but people just kind of wink and they don't seem to care.
Well, but the reason they do care, but if they acknowledge, then their whole life changes. People don't want their life to change. People hate changes. I don't like changes. But if I see something, you know, if I see a car coming down my path, I'm going to move.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's...
There's also a certain amount of mischievousness in people where they will watch the problem coming and just kind of grin about it. They see it coming.
You know what I think it is, though?
They just want the action. They want to see it to some degree, and not out of malice per se, but sometimes just out of amusement that, hey, man, this is going to be cool. Going to have an economic collapse. You'd be great, man.
I think it's a matter of being right and wrong. Those who believe that we're living in this world of illusion, the people who don't believe in it, are waiting to prove us wrong. They want to be right.
I agree.
That they're looking through those rose-colored glasses are correct.
I agree. This becomes a question of faith. What religion do you belong to? Are you a Keynesian?
Or wrong? Everybody wants to be right.
Placing a bet. They're not perceiving the truth. They're placing a bet, and they'll do whatever they can to make their bet turn out to be valid. We're going to take a break for some commercials. Be back in a moment. Please stay tuned. I'm Alfred Addis with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a KU band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis, here on Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom. Got an article here from, I guess it's the New York Times. 4.2 million sign up for Obamacare, but only a quarter are young adults. Enrollment in Obamacare's new insurance exchanges rose to 4.2 million, but the percentage of young consumers signing up remained below targets. Department of Health and Human Services announced the new figures Tuesday and pressed Americans to sign up for Obamacare, right? But the deadline is March 31st. You know, we've got March 31st is the deadline for Obamacare, and April 15th is a deadline for the IRS. And I don't know what the deadline, what will we have for a deadline in May? Melody, do you have any idea?
A deadline?
There must be some kind of deadline. We should have at least one deadline per month, I think. I think it's important here in the New World Order, and in order to maintain obedience, Sieg Heil, the government should have at least one deadline per month, and soon perhaps one a week. One a week's not bad, Melody. One deadline per week. You got to do something or the government's going to jump on you. The problem they have is that Health and Human Services said that one in four of the enrollees from October to March 1st were aged 18 to 34, which is short of the 40% that analysts say health insurers will need to offset higher costs of sick and elderly patients who cannot be denied coverage. So we've got 20% of the kids are signing up, relative young people. I won't say kids up to 34, but 25, they need 40%. They've got 20% or 25% or thereabouts. Overall figure, though, is still, they've got 4.2 million signed up by now, but it's still well behind the administration's target of 7 million enrollees on March 31st. They need another 2.8 million in the next couple of weeks, which is more than half of what they've signed up in the past several months. On that date, March 31st, individual mandate will kick in, subjecting those without health insurance to penalties. First year, it's going to be something like $95 a year as your fine. If you don't sign up, Melody, it's going to cost you $95. You probably have to get a job down at McDonald's, Walmart, or something like that, and hope and support Obama's move for higher minimum wage, make enough money to pay your $95 penalty. Actually, probably not. But in any case, point. It's not working out. I don't know what they're going to do to try to fix Obamacare, but it's not working out. It's not simply true that the program itself is of questionable value. It's true that the mathematics and the financial basis of the program, it ain't happening at this time. I've got another article here. Obama will. Now, this is interesting. There's some interesting points here. Obama, from the New York Times. Obama will seek broad expansion of overtime pay. There's the headline. President Obama this week will seek to force American businesses to pay more overtime to millions of workers, the latest move by his administration to confront corporations that have had soaring profits, even as wages have stagnated. Okay, so Robin Hood, President Barack Robin Hood Obama is out to rob the rich and give it to the poor. That's what he's essentially saying here. On Thursday, the president will direct the Labor Department to revamp its regulations to require overtime pay for several million additional fast food managers, loan officers, computer technicians, and others whom many businesses classify as executive or professional employees to avoid paying them overtime. And I can see certain justification in this. They put people on salaries, and then they work them 50, 60 hours a week. And they think they're a salaried employee. They think that's something big. In fact, it's a way of exploiting people.
I don't agree.
It is in a lot of instances.
No, it isn't.
It is.
No, it isn't.
Well, it was and my experience.
Well, and I also think it's the employee before they accept positions.
I agree with
you
that.
Know, so,
I agree
yeah.
with that. We have
you know, people need to start taking responsibility for themselves.
I get that.
Instead of passing the buck.
Yeah, I get that. But there are circumstances when everybody's doing things a certain way, you don't have an option. You either take a job or a kind of job that's available to you, or you don't have any job at all. And if most of the employers are working on the business on the idea that we'll take this street sweeper and tell him he's a salaried employee, and then we'll work him 60 or 80 hours a week,
I think his
there's a question of fairness here.
I think
I'm not coming down in favor of the people on this situation, but I am admitting that there is a question of fairness here that doesn't seem right to me. It's exploited to what degree?
But usually, also when you have salaried employees, it also works the other way. You get days off, you get a lot of free time,
it
you get holidays, you get vacations.
People, yeah, if you're the vice president for JPMorgan Chase,
that's not true. That's not true.
If you're a manager for McDonald's, maybe not. All right? They're trying to treat people who are really just working in a wage-earning position.
I think what
and they're treating us, oh, you have a salary.
I think what he is doing is he's offsetting these businesses who are eliminating positions to avoid Obamacare. I think this is his way of coming back and saying, I'm going to get you one way or another. You know, you can't be dropping hours to avoid paying for Obamacare. So I think this is his way.
Be.
I think
there may
this
be
is his way
there.
Of getting even.
And what he may be doing, I see what you're saying, and what you're saying is that right now, I think you have to work somebody at least 30 hours a week in order for them to qualify for Obamacare. But if he can put some of these people to work as if they were executives and put them on salary, they can work 45, 50 hours a week and maybe still not get Obamacare. I don't know if that's true or false, but
they would work
perhaps that's possible. But let me go on with my point.
I think there should be caps on overtime, but go ahead.
If people's incomes rise, they spend more and theoretically stimulate the economy. In other words, if Obama, the idea is at least a justification for paying more to people that are working in these alleged salary positions, pay them hourly wages, they'll have more money to spend. That extra money will stimulate the economy. That's one perspective. On the other hand, if corporate labor costs rise, because now they start paying people wages where they used to pay them just salaries, either corporate profits fall or prices go up. All right? If prices go up, the economy slows. So what will happen if Obama has his way? By raising some employees' incomes, will we stimulate or will we slow the economy? And the answer to that is that's the wrong question. That's not the question. That's not really the problem. Of course, raising or lowering any individual's income makes a difference to the individual. But one way or another, Obama's plan to raise the income for some corporate employees will be achieved by lowering the incomes of other corporate employees or raising costs for consumers and thereby lowering the consumer standard of living. It's like squeezing a balloon. We can get one of those long hot dog-shaped balloons. If we squeeze it at the rich end of the balloon, we can make it bulge at the poor end of the balloon. All right? But in the end, we still have the same amount of air in the balloon. The problem I'm trying to describe here is the idea that Obama's only going to raise wages for some people by reducing wages for other people. And that's not the solution to our problem. The only way we can really stimulate our balloon economy is by increasing the amount of air in the balloon. It's not enough to squeeze it at one end to make it bulge at the other end. What we want to do is we want to make the balloon bigger. Not just distort it, we want to make it bigger. From a national or economic perspective, it doesn't make any difference if we raise some employees' incomes by lowering other employees' incomes. What difference does it make? You understand? Squeeze the balloon. We still have the same amount of money in the balloon economy. Squeeze one end, squeeze the other end, squeeze it in the middle. Still have the same amount of wealth there. The primary solution is not to simply increase some people's incomes at the expense of others. The solution is to increase productivity. So there's more air in the entire balloon. The fundamental problem is not that some people are paid too much and others paid too little. The fundamental problem is we don't produce enough goods and services to allow everyone to have a decent income. If that's true, and I think it is, then what is the biggest cause of our loss of productivity? And the answer is government. We reported about 6 months ago on a study by two economists who calculated that the American productivity was being crushed by government regulations. They calculated that if today's level of government regulation was the same as it had been back in 1949, the average income per household would rise from $53,000, that's what it is today, to the median income, I believe is what they said in the economic report, median income per household from $53,000 to over $300,000. In other words, government regulations reduced your potential income and mine, ladies and gentlemen, by about 80% over the past 65 years. So let's just suppose that several million, this was the quote from the article, let's suppose that several million additional fast food managers, loan officers, computer technicians, and others whom many businesses currently classify as executive or professionals, who President Obama proposes to help by raising overtime pay, let's suppose they were living in an economy that was regulated at the same level as 1949. They wouldn't need Obama's assistance. They might already be earning three or four times as much as they are currently being paid. How much trouble would any of these people have if they were getting, how much trouble would you have, would I have, would anybody have, if our incomes were increased by three or four times? Right? In truth, we all want a lot of the regulation government has enacted. Our food and drinking water needs to be pure. Automobiles need to be manufactured to be safe to drive. If we had to choose, we could still choose, if we could choose, I'll bet that Americans would vote to keep maybe half of the existing governmental regulations. But I also bet that Americans would vote to eliminate half of today's regulations. If the regulatory burden were cut by half, and if the economic study that we'd mentioned earlier by two economists on the effect of government regulations, if their conclusions are roughly correct, then we could expect to see our incomes to at least double if we could cut current government regulation in half. Again, how many problems do Americans have that couldn't be solved if their incomes were doubled? And the answer is not many. And the implication here is that if President Obama really wants to raise Americans' incomes, if he really wants to stimulate the economy and do the right thing for the majority of the American people, all he needs is to cut government regulation by half. We don't need $85 billion a month or $65 billion a month from the Federal Reserve. What we need is less government regulations. Cut the government regulations by half. Do that, and the economy will roar like a lion, which raises the next question. Does President Obama really want to raise Americans' income? Does he really want to stimulate the economy? Obama's actions and those of the past few presidential administrations and Congress suggest that the real objective is not increased American wealth or a stronger economy. Instead, their objectives appear to be increased power for the government and diminished wealth for the American people. So my argument is that if the president wants to help the economy, what he ought to do is get off our backs. Stop meddling. We can handle this situation just fine if we can get you and the rest of the bureaucrats off our backs. We don't need you. You understand? And the best thing you could do for all of us is to go away. Our nation and individual prosperity is being destroyed by our own unlimited government. If anyone wants a chance at rising American prosperity, they'd better grab hold of the fundamental idea of the Constitution of the United States, which was what? Limited government. Put the limits back on government, put the government back under the Constitution, and our incomes can once again become almost unlimited. They would certainly rise dramatically. Allow government to keep growing in power and regulatory breadth, and I guarantee that 90% of the American people are headed into an impoverished third world future. Ta-da! What do you think, Melody?
I think we're just about out of time.
Yeah, but we got a minute. You got to think of something. I've said everything I can think of. I'm out. I got nothing else to say, Melody. So now you got to fill in about.
What I'm going to say is all of these problems that you just mentioned is because we have a fiat currency. Yeah. By having a fiat currency, that is the root of our problem.
It is,
and we have to eliminate. We have to put. We have to have again a stable currency.
Mm-hmm.
That is the root of the problem, and the reason we need double our incomes. The reason we need $20-$30 an hour just so we can make a decent wage. Is because of inflation, because of our currency system, the monetary policy that they have forced upon this.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what needs to be changed.
We can handle a situation if the government will get off our backs, stand aside, let the people do what they want to do, and the economy will heal. Stay in control, you folks in Washington, and we're all going to be in big, big trouble. We're out of time, Melody, so we got to go. We'll be back tomorrow. Hope you'll tune in at that time. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.